And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember.
And declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, from the BAU Devil Studios of Freedom to the Left, freedomphoenix.com. See, Colin, man, you got to sing with me. I'm playing some Rolling Stone or something. I got Morpheus to sing.
Oh, yeah?
He sings so bad. You know, I wanted to give him, because he, we do karaoke. Oh, yeah. He's going to be like done, and we can, I think it's like the 21st or something.
Yeah,
we're working
party
out.
On the 21st.
So, yeah, party.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, are you guys going to have a party, or?
Yeah, we'll come.
Yeah, I thought if you have something separate, I didn't want to compete, but we'll do a party here.
No,
oh, yeah. Party. Well, the thing is, we got a karaoke.
Okay.
Cause,
so we're going to put more of this up.
Oh,
there.
Damn, Skippy. and he doesn't care. It's an I need it my way. I mean, you know, he'll belt it. It's the show. You know Morpheus, he's all about the show, man.
So
he goes, it doesn't matter as long as you give him a show, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, CB, like, Madonna can't sing anymore, but she'll put on a show, whatever, you know? Well, maybe she can, I don't care.
Yeah.
But so his whole thing is just attitude, and he really focused a lot on his Tibetan Buddhist revelations.
It's pretty amazing, I mean, hearing his story of, you know, going through. I mean, he's the perfect example of somebody that, you know, was put in a, you know, terrible situation and made the best of it. I mean, he's been, you know, he was saying he's been spreading the word on Bitcoin, you know, all throughout his sentence.
You know, every
everyone
detention officer,
everyone knows about
criminal,
Bitcoin.
Everybody
knows now. It's cool that he got really deep into the Tibetan Buddhism. You know, I mean, it's really cool to see that, you know, that's something that really helped him through it all. I mean, some people they go in and they end up coming out worse, you know, with revenge and hate and anger and, you know, I mean, he come out like he's just.
I was
he's
at
just
the
tooting, man. He's doing
the
good.
The sentencing, and the judge. It was amazing. He's like, I'd love to sit down and have a conversation with Thomas. I think he's an awesome guy. He's he should, you know, give me grandchildren or something. I mean, you know, it was just he was really was impressed with Thomas.
Yeah,
you know, because he had sent him. He communicated with the judge on a regular basis, and he sent him the list of all the books that he's reading. And it's hundreds of books. I mean,
read like 200 books, he said.
So it's, and it really had an impact on him, this whole thing. But it didn't change, you know, his opinion of really anything other than, you know, his own personal, I don't know, what would you call it? His own personal path through all this mess.
Yeah.
But so I asked him, I said, are you prevented from doing Bitcoin? You know, can you trade? Can you do? Can he goes, yeah, I don't think there was some restriction. Is there a restriction?
On trading Bitcoin?
Yeah, there was something.
Well,
I don't think he could do financial transactions or something.
No, so when you are taking money from someone else and giving it to somebody else, right? Like I'm taking money from you and acting as a liaison to maybe give it to Donna. Right. Once you start doing that, that's where you get into money transmitter laws.
Well, so he was a financial institution, and they didn't get that. You know, he's not required to do KYC. It's in a gray area.
Really? So they weren't able to get him on the money transmitters? They just tried to get him with money laundering?
They got him on money laundering.
Yeah.
No, the money...
running an unlicensed money transmitter
business. Right, that was
business.
Not because... They couldn't show that he was liable for that. You know, he didn't meet the qualification. That was the whole point. I mean, that's everything that the feds wanted. They didn't get it.
Yeah, it's technically all just property, you know? So, I mean, I always say, like, you know, some people are like, oh, is it, you know, bad to sell your Bitcoin for cash? It's like, no, really. I mean, you're just selling your own personal property, you know? I mean, and in his case, he could argue that to a certain extent. But, I mean, FinCEN, I mean, they got us twice, right? In 2013, 2014, when they put out the regulations where they said, well, we're going to tax it as a property, so you have to pay capital gains, right? But then we're also going to regulate it as a currency, and, you know, you have to get a money transmitter license and all that other stuff.
Yeah, I know. You try and do your taxes, and IRS goes, I don't know. We'll let the lawsuits figure out what it is until however we can benefit the most. The Crown gets whatever the hell they want.
Yeah.
You know, it's just been a joke. Well, I think it's getting to the point to where it just doesn't matter. And that's kind of my thing on all this stuff. I'm going, I just need to, it doesn't matter. They don't see it. They don't know it. It's none of your business. And kind of when do we get to that? And I thought that was kind of like Nexus Earth stuff. What the hell, man? Are you going full compliance or you're not? Or what's your focus?
What do you mean full
now?
Compliance?
Well, I mean, you know, there's times that you're going, yep, we are compliant. Our wallets are compliant. It goes straight to the NSA. You get to see everything.
Did I say that?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
I was going to be like,
I just want to know.
I don't remember saying that.
I want to know.
I mean,
so what's the future? Tell us about Nexus Earth now. Where are you guys at?
So Tritium's deployed, live, running on the network.
I heard that. What does that mean?
That means you have a bunch of just buttons now. Remember all
damn
the just...
Damn Skippy, better have grandma just buttons.
Oh, yeah, you got grandma just buttons now. So, you know, you have your wallet.dat. Like, one of the big things that we've done to make it easy is you don't have a wallet.dat anymore. You don't have to make backups on flash drives. So what you do is you log into your Tritium account now. So you have a username and a password.
You know, I have my USB in my safe.
Yeah.
I have my whatever the heck Nexus of the last time of Linux or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, yeah.
You ain't leaving until you get my crap straight.
I knew that was coming.
I didn't even think of that, but I am now. You came in and leave, and I didn't get all updated.
Oh, yeah, we're going to help you. We'll get you all set.
Well, how's the current? I didn't even check. How's the price going? Are you getting the wave up again or what?
No, I mean, we've been kind of skeeting off the bottom, you know, after a while. So, I mean, the market's pretty – they bottomed out, like – over the last few months. So, I mean, we're coming up now. So we bounced off our last bottom. So we're like 20 cents ish, something 22. So, I mean, it's better. I mean, our low was 16 cents. That was the lowest low that we've hit. But I mean, despite all of it, right? Just this horrible, terrible bear market, we delivered the code, man. And it works great too, which is
so
amazing.
You just kept developing anyway. You're like, yeah, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you
I put,
do your thing. We're just
I
developing.
Put a lot of my own money into it over 2019, just to keep it going, you know, and keep paying and stuff like that. Keep paying employees and get it over the line. And we did. So
Tritium was, you had different levels of, features and options and all this kind of stuff. Explain, you know, the development progression, what you were doing and where you're at now.
Yeah, so Tritium is the first of three upgrades called the Tau framework. So there's the lower level library Tau framework, right? Lower level library I've been developing since about 2014. Then the Tau framework since about 2017. So Tau stands for Tritium, Omnium, Obsidian, and what that's meant to do is essentially upgrade a live upgrade path from a legacy-style blockchain into a full three-dimensional chain, right? Because part of the reason that we're doing it in a live upgrade and not just a chain reboot, like Ethereum 2.0, if you've heard of that, they're not upgrading Ethereum. Actually, they're creating a whole new blockchain, and then they're going to have people swap.
Yeah, just yesterday, I think it's probably still on the front page. You had Vitalik was out explaining his 2.0, and I'm going, I just saw it listening, just say, you know, see, he's healthy, he's good, and, you know, peace out, you know, Vitalik. Because I've had him on before, and I go, all right, Vitalik, explain to me what Ethereum is. And I guarantee he didn't do any better job at 2.0. Because I was like, man, it's just, I don't need the headache. So one to two, we're going to talk all of this.
Yeah,
we got
yeah.
plenty of time.
Yeah.
Alex Newman called Donna. He had a phone problem or whatever first hour, so he's rescheduled for Wednesday. So he'll be back on Wednesday, and we'll get all updated with Alex Newman on the 2020 election cycle, the new American writer, and we'll talk about education, so on. So Alex, he didn't totally redeem himself. But anyway, he'll be scheduled next Wednesday. Colin Cantrell, Nexus.
From the second letter of Captain Mark. Any pirate knows that commerce is communication. Markets condense oceans of information into a single price. Innovations in communication are circumventing the scrutiny of the crown. This signals a change in the coin of the realm. The crown uses digital currency to surveil, censor, seize, and destroy wealth at will, so pirate currency must protect us from this weaponized money. We need to move funds further, faster, cheaper, and without third-party observation, basing decisions on an accelerating flow of information. So pirates require nearly instantaneous transactions with no arbitrary limits on volume or artificial influences on fees. Most importantly, a pirate currency must preclude centralization. Otherwise, it will become another link in our chain to the crown. A superior currency will result in the obsolescence of the coin of the realm and the extinction of the crown itself. Trade above the grid. Join us at PiratesWithoutBorders.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And we're back, we're back, we're back. Colin Cantrell, we're going to have some fun, rock and roll and whatnot. All right, Alex Newman next Wednesday. Got that taken care of. He said it was his phone, my phone, cheap phone. It's got phone. The app phone didn't wake you up. That's what it did. Yeah, I was like, yeah, who are we kidding here?
Yeah, but it's tough to get on your show super early, man.
Well, he's back. Whatever. I give him a pass. He's always been pretty good to this show, so I'm not going to be a butthead about it. Yeah, maybe I will be. I don't know, you know. Because I can. I wanted to get caught up with Colin on Nexus. Now, this is the one thing I hear this all the time. He just said he has a new what? What do you got? You say it. Say it.
Grandma just bought.
No. The female in your life. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
She's your
wife.
Wife! Yeah. Wife, Colin's married. Nah. So, you guys, I know I just lost half my audience. They go, damn it. And I was hoping to get married. Anyway, so you have, young crypto guy, got going on, and a woman. Now, she's from not here.
No, she's not. She's from England.
England! Does she have an accent?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's so sexy. Okay. So, what happened is, tell the audience what she said, about she's glad that we did the show. She understands what the hell you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, because she said she used to always listen to some of your really early interviews with me and you. She really liked your pirate attitude of things, and, that's kind of one of the reasons that we, started talking, because she kind of said she felt like she remembered me hearing us talk and stuff, so.
Oh, you go, yeah. Oh, you were that guy. Oh, and you're tall and good-looking, too.
Well, yeah, I guess that helps.
Yeah, it's better than, they see me and they go, I thought you'd be taller.
Yeah, I looked out there. I looked, you look way bigger in your pictures. It's usually like, oh, you look way smaller in your pictures.
Yeah, so. No, you're a tall guy. Well, how you're what, 6'2 or something?
6'3, yeah. 6'2, something like that.
So, tall drink of water. You're a good looking, smart guy, so that always better than not. All right. What I wanted to do, and what she was talking about, is I hear this a lot. Is that anybody does anything on Nexus, they go looking at, it always winds up, just do the Ernie interview,
yeah.
And you get the 9.5 hour, it was that one day. And then we had you on the next week, talk about Nexus, and hell, by then, didn't matter, we learned everything before, but this is what happened. After, 7 years or something, of having a lot of the blockchain guys on and hearing about Bitcoin, yeah. This and the promises and anonymity, and then it was pseudo-anonymity, and I had to look that up, and it meant not. And I'm going, God, you guys, bunch of lying sacks of snot,
means,
man.
It means partially, I mean, if
it's... It does say you're not. I mean, it's by choice, and if you know it, well, you should say that up front.
Yeah.
Because when you got newbies coming in, and they think now they're sitting in jail. They need to know this, that they had to be, of course, we figured that out.
Blockchain forensics, too, especially Bitcoin. I mean, there's fungibility issues with Bitcoin and Litecoin right now, just because if somebody does something illegal with one of those Bitcoins at a certain point, Certain exchanges won't allow that because they have such strong forensic analysis. They actually color the coins, and it's breaking fungibility of Bitcoins, because if you get a Bitcoin from somebody else that happened to be a Bitcoin that a crime was committed with,
or even a part of that Bitcoin.
Yeah, a month ago, like, they color it. And so people are actually having to resort to mixers now just to use their Bitcoins for fungibility, which is a big issue.
And then they go after the guys that are doing that. Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's just a thing.
Yep.
You know, if the crown can, they are. I mean,
So
I said, we need to make it to where they can't. And that was the commercial that we just had, the second letter of Captain Mark.
Yeah.
Which I gave you one of the latest books. It's now obsolete again because we got another letter that is on space travel.
Oh, yeah?
All right, we're going to space. Government's not invited, but they're going to have Space Force Alliance, whatever, there anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, you go online, you'll see the latest one that Dobby and I just did. So what we did is Colin came in, and he was saying how great and wonderful and better Nexus is in Bitcoin. And I go, oh, that means something to me if I had somebody explain to me what the hell Bitcoin was. You know, I need somebody freaking, I want ones and zeros. Why is it, you know, 8-bit this or, you know, 16-bit? What is that even? So we went and did
17 and a half hours.
Yeah, no, it was, well, edited down to like 9.5. But,
yeah, but full.
Yeah, it was 18-hour thing. You came in at like 6. You didn't leave till midnight.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Now, this is, no, pretty much. I remember. It was midnight.
It was. Had 6 to midnight, I remember.
So Donna, you know, kept us fed and, you know, and watered and stuff. But what we did, we had a whiteboard. And a lot of times I'd take a break. We did 2 hours. Of the live show. And then Patrick Byrne was on that day.
Yeah.
So Patrick Byrne came on for an hour. So that was cool. It was in line with what we were doing. And then we did the podcast. We just kept going. Now, at some points, I go, wait. We need to take a break here. I need to understand this more so that I can speak, like, English to the audience. And then, you know, you can say, okay, you got it. And, you know, I can explain it. So we went through that, and the 18 hours edited down to, like, 9.5. And the rest of those hours was Colin, you know, taking every question I had on a whiteboard.
Yep.
I saved that whiteboard. I wouldn't let anybody touch it for freaking like a year, you know. And then, but I needed it. It kept refreshing, and I explained it to people. And people go, okay, I get it. Why didn't somebody ever say that? I'm going, because they freaking...
Well, if you don't understand something well enough to explain it simply,
you don't really understand it.
Yeah.
And I mean, these people that keep saying how expert they are and everything, they don't know.
I don't want to, like, point any direct fingers.
I got to point all the fingers.
But
they don't know.
It's kind of like, I always kind of say, when it comes to, like, technical things or, like, any type of academic, there's a lot of intellectual masturbation. And what I mean by that is overcomplicating it for the sake of confusing people.
For the sake of making them sound like they know what they're talking about when they don't.
To make themselves feel smarter by other people not understanding what they're saying, right? So, I mean, like, a lot of this academic stuff has become somewhat cryptic, you know, and everyone's, ooh, ah, ooh, yeah, look at me, yeah, you know.
You
like,
look
don't
at-
understand it, because then you're going to really see what's going on, you know. So, like, I've seen a very limited understanding of, like, not just, like, the core concepts of a blockchain, but of, like, the underlying. I mean, like, I have...
Even the hardware.
Yeah, and I have a unique perspective, too, because I spent so much time with Satoshi's code, right? You know, I mean, understanding how he thought, so that, like, you know, I was able to extrapolate and project that forward of saying, well, you know, I mean, Satoshi never finished. I mean, Bitcoin is 0.18, 0.19, right? You ever wonder why there's a zero?
Because it wasn't done.
Yeah, because you go to version 1.0 by iterating that zero. So in an alpha and beta phases, you're 0. whatever, right? They're not out of alpha and beta yet. I mean, they haven't gone to a full. I think what happened is they just kept that way for a few versions, and then they just ended up when Blockstream took over, and they just, like, you know, missed that little detail of, oh, wait, we need to make Bitcoin actual production, you know, version. But
make it where it actually is what we keep saying it is.
Yeah.
The This is what happened, you know, from my perspective. I give you an example. I'm old, chubby, white guy with a beard, you know, gray. And I'm at, you know, some function, I don't want to say where, but recently I was at a gathering, at a, you know, thing.
Oh.
And then here comes a Bitcoin maximalist. He's going to explain it to me.
Oh, boy.
Okay? And I'm going, yeah. So it's like tone, you know. I had Jimmy Song on.
Yeah.
Did you hear about this?
No.
Oh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
All right, let me finish the other story.
Okay,
you'll see.
Okay.
So he comes up and he's like, oh, well, yeah, Bitcoin maximalist, blah, 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 blah. I'm going, yeah, but I got, you know, issued. Oh, well, you don't know. Do you explain? I go, really? Okay, well, answer me this. And never mind. He goes on. He didn't know.
I know.
He was just BSing. He's just reading off the 3x5 card of BS.
Yeah, yeah. There's, I mean, the tribalistic mentality of Bitcoin maximalism is fueled by Blockstream's, you know, anti anybody against their agenda, right? Since the compromise of development in 2014, they don't want any other crypto project to succeed and make Bitcoin irrelevant, so they have Bitcoin maximalism that they created in a way.
I'll tell you the Jimmy Song thing off air. Yeah, go to the stream!
Hi, I'm Derek.
Okay, yeah, Derek J. Derek J. Yeah. And Steve, I love those guys.
Yeah,
Any
yeah.
Pay, we're working with them on a lot of stuff whenever I get a chance because they're cool. All right, what happened? You know, Tone comes out and hangs and stays, and you know we're good friends. I like Tone. You know, he's not a bad guy. He's just freaking Tone.
Yeah.
So what happened was he's going. You know, he always says, well, the smartest guys are in Bitcoin, and they're smart, and they're smarter than me, and they're smarter than you, and they're smart.
That's what he says.
And I'm going, now, well, give me one of these smart guys, and he explained it to me.
Yeah.
Jimmy Song, okay? Now, Jimmy Song is a professor in Austin University of something. He's got some street cred. He's an Asian guy wearing a cowboy hat.
Yeah.
So my first question, I go, all right, what's with the cowboy hat? Is this like, you know, so you don't all look alike or something? I mean, what is this? And he goes, well, I'm in Texas. I go, okay, say no more. I get Texas, okay? So anyway, he had to get that out. So I had a good conversation. It was fun. He was on the show.
Yeah.
We did an hour, and he wasn't able to convince me. You know, we had breaks and everything, so on, but he didn't really felt that he did a good job. He goes, I want to come back. We'll do it. I said, however long you want, man.
Yeah.
So on Wednesdays, we usually do James Corbett. And I said, we just get an hour with him. I said, well, I'm sitting in the chair. We'll do Corbett. And then after that, you know, we'll just plug you in. We'll do a podcast. We'll go till we're done.
Yeah.
And we scheduled at least 2 hours. 40 minutes and I was done. You know, I'm like, you know, but we went the whole 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Now I'm just like, you know, because then it started, you know, he started getting animated and going, all right, well, just, all right, keep going, you know, try and convince me. I don't think you're going to do it because you haven't done it yet. So what happened was he came in and it was like what you're talking about. Well, I'm going bamboozle you with BS and I'm going, look, I know enough. I've been interviewing people on this stuff and, of course, what you shared with me. Enough to at least ask the right questions.
Yeah.
Answer me this. You know? They can't.
No.
They won't.
No.
It's bullshit.
Yeah, I know. I mean, when you talk to them, too, like, I mean, the biggest thing about, like, small blockers and big blockers, right? They'll be like, small blocks. Oh, we need to have small block sizes. You'd be like, okay. So this is for mom and pop, right? And they're like, yeah, mom and pop need to run a node. It can't be decentralized if mom and pop can't run a node. So, I mean, if blocks are too big, it's too expensive. You'd be like, okay. So the Bitcoin blockchain is about 300 gigabytes right now, 200 gigabytes. We're like, yeah. Like, okay. So how much does a 1 terabyte hard drive cost?
Nothing.
$200, $100, right?
Oh, hell, they're going to be giving them away as
door
prizes.
How much were the transaction fees at the end of 2017? $200 a Bitcoin transaction. Wait, what one's more economical? Like, because you're talking about like people running full nodes and paying $100 and that being like some sin. But yet, you know, it's okay to pay $200 a transaction just because you have, you know, small blocks. Like, you know, that totally makes sense. I mean, mom and pop can totally use Bitcoin for $200 a transaction now, right? I don't know. There's not much logic. It's more like repetitive, you know, like, oh, he says, she says,
yeah,
he
no,
says,
I,
she says.
I'm looking for...
But there's not really a firm, you know, but I mean, there's the other side of the debate too,
pyramid.
Man. I mean, you can't indefinitely scale the block size. It just isn't going to work. I mean, Craig Wright doing like 2 gigabyte blocks is just as lunatic, you know, I mean, there's just as much lunacy going on there because, I mean, you have the cryptography that has to be verified on the block. So it doesn't matter if you have these gigantic blocks, right? You have to verify all the signatures. You have to verify that the inputs weren't double spent. And that takes a period of time. I think the biggest Bitcoin block or the biggest transaction in a Bitcoin block contained like, I think, thousands of different inputs, and it was like one transaction that was a megabyte, right? And this was like from way back when. People said it took 30 seconds to process this block, right? So if your blocks get so big, like people will not be able to actually process those blocks as they come in, right? Because if your time to process it takes longer than 10 minutes, right, you're never going to be able to keep up with the
blockchain. Let's talk about this live on the air. We're coming back.
.lrn.fm toot.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
kind of sounds kind of funky. That sounds like Elon Musk. Did you hear his thing?
No.
It's like number 4 on SoundCloud or something.
He made a song?
Yeah, he sings it too. It's some techno thing, like bedroom sex sleep.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah, it was all right.
Because he can.
Yeah.
Kiss my butt, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever. It's just he's got to piss off everybody. There was some car guy in England did an evaluation of the Model 3, and he's all, yeah, electric car.
Yeah.
And one of his friends gave it to him. His other guy has a McLaren and this and that. And he's having a kid. He had to get all like reasonable, but he wanted a performance car.
Yeah.
Well, he gets a Model 3, and he's making fun of him. And he goes, here, you drive it. By the time he gets done doing this 20-minute drive, he's like, damn, I love this car. I hate that. So anyway, there's so much stuff going on. And we're going to talk about space and SpaceX and your space satellite doing, Nexus Galactic, whatever the heck. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
I like Jimmy Song. He was a nice enough guy. Tone and I are good friends and everything. But I really, 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 really have not gotten any technical from the first one and zero like you did over that. If you guys go to today's show and you'll see Colin Cantrell in there and has a hyperlink in the archive, and you click that and it goes to all the times you've been on the show.
Yeah.
And it'll say, in there, the big show or whatever it is. You'll tell which one it is. And if you want to know, and I've had several of your employees, people at conferences, and they go, thank God you did that.
Yeah.
You slowed him effing down, took the time, made him explain every freaking word, and go through. Now, this is what happened. Just to give you a sample of how it did. A block. What the hell is a block? How does that even happen? Why is it 1 megabyte? How is it 1 megabyte? Where does it come from? We went even before that.
Mm-hmm.
It was ones and zeros. Mm-hmm. All right, we have 8-bit, 16, 32. Why? What the hell does that even mean? So you went through how information binary is done.
Yep.
It goes in. So when we did that 18-hour day, then you came, because how it happened is you said, Nexus is better in every way from the beginning. I go, if I understood Bitcoin, then maybe I'd understand how you were better.
Yeah.
That's why we did it. So I could at the very beginning, in the last 5 minutes, Colin goes, at the beginning, when you have the memory pool of all the transactions that go in a one-line feed into the memory pool, you were able, at Nexus, you saw that was a potential block.
Mm-hmm.
So that you paralleled a bunch of processing of that at the beginning, so you wouldn't have this backup problem thing, that you could parallel process transactions. During he goes, from the beginning, I could see where the bottleneck was going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
So you did, and I go, okay, we'll do that next time. Go home.
Yeah.
So in 30 seconds, after I understood 18 hours, all of a sudden I go, okay, he understood it enough that he went to the very beginning and started taking out bottlenecks.
Yep.
That's what you did.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can't, claim to solve problems before you really understand the problems, right? Which is, that's why I started with, a really ancient Bitcoin code base from 2012, actually. Because I just wanted to make sure that, I understood everything that Satoshi was really intending to do. And because of that, that's kind of what spawned a lot of, the innovations that we have now. And then from the block size debate, too, I started realizing and seeing all these different things that they were working on and, coming up with my own solution. And that's kind of what came up.
Yeah, get right up on the mic. You're not.
Yeah, sorry, I'm a little stuffy.
There you go. Well, see, that's one thing. I talked to your father, Jim Cantrell, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But I talked to him and I said, where'd this come? How was Colin doing? Yeah, he's a little computer geek. He's out doing whatever, I was just like, buy him another computer, shut him up. Whatever. So, this has been your life. So when by the time you got to, you saw blockchain, you went, oh, I know what's going on here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, as a developer, I started, when I was 11, making video games and stuff. Because, I could just make my own little worlds, man. You're sick of, other stuff, you just, I'll go build a scene, I'll make, rainy day, or I'll make sunshine, or, make rolling grassy hills and stuff, and go explore them. So, but since then, it's just, I kind of liken it to, like, a constant quest lower and lower and lower, because I really wanted to understand the deeper mechanisms that make everything work. And from that drive to understand it, you know, that's where I've been able to, you know, from that help you, you know, understanding. So when I first found out about sockets, I think that was 2012. Yeah. And sockets are just a part of the OSI stack. So, I mean, the OSI is just, think about it as just a big stack, you know, seven different layers. Each layer is responsible for processing a different thing, right? So, you know, on the internet, you have the physical layer, which is your first layer, right? That's, you know, copper and fiber. And then you have the second layer, which is your data link layer. That's kind of like your Ethernet. And then you have the third layer, which is your network layer, which is, you know, all the IP addresses. So you have a packet. So, I mean, think about when you add these layers, it's kind of like, first you have your initial core data set, that then you add, you know, your data link protocol and then the IP. And then when you get to the transport layer, then you go into the UDP or TCP, right, which is the fourth layer. And then you get to the transport, brain fart, sorry. The next layer is it's not the presentation. I think I'm missing one, but the session layer, sorry. The session layer is where you actually have the sockets themselves, right? So when I talked about it, that's why I kind of came into this, because when I found out about sockets in 2012, it just was like, bing!
Okay, my whole, sockets mean?
It's just, a socket is kind of like something on a computer. It's, I can open it up in software, and it allows me to talk to your computer, right? So when I have your IP address and a port number.
So it's after a handshake or something.
Well, the handshakes, that's only for TLS generally. Transparent.
Okay, layers, security. He's going to get, see, this is why they go, Ernie, stop him, ask the question. Okay, this is, I'm going to.
Yeah, yeah.
We got time, we can do this.
Yeah, we got plenty of time.
Yeah, let's do this, okay.
Yeah, so a handshake.
No, you had your chance. Okay. Everybody's already lost. I got to do this. All right, let me get my, see, it's just that you're low, so I'm trying to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ian's going, Ernie, you're blowing it out, man. Well, I'm trying to bring it up for him. I'm going to bring me down. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Okay, I'll go there. All right, this is what's going on. When you have binary, mm-hmm. Now let's walk this through so people understand how much time we got in this segment. All right, a minute. God dang it. All right. Binary is ones and zeros.
Yep.
I got these ones and zeros. This is where I'm going, okay, explain to me why they talk 8-bit, 16, 30, what the hell does that even mean?
Yep.
How? And you demonstrated and showed yep. me this is why they have hardware the way it is and why yep. these blockchains are the way they are
yep.
because it's dependent on the hardware.
Yep.
So this is not just software.
Yep.
If you're going to run software, you have to have the hardware to run the software.
Yep.
And the hardware is limiting in what some kind of things that you can do. Things change. You got to understand the fundamental down at the first one and zero thing.
Yeah, and I mean, CPUs could only get so small. They're having this thing called quantum tunneling happening too. So, I mean, you have Moore's Law, right? But they say Moore's Law goes in a linear path, right?
Let me explain this, because I already know you're going to go off the
Yeah, thing. You want to explain it? Yeah,
no, you know. Quantum okay. tunneling, because I had some experience with
okay,
this.
Okay, cool.
A friend of mine's son was at Arizona State University, blah, 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 and the interface between fiber optic and copper. You have the fiber optic coming in, it's yep. super fast, woohoo! But you got to convert photons into electrons.
Yep.
When you have the processing of these ones and zeros, and you put these chips, and you can see Motorola, I used to in the 70s, you would see these big giant negatives that'd be 3 feet by 3 feet,
yeah.
and they would take and they'd map all the circuitry and everything, the transistors,
yep.
and then they had to make it itty bitty living space and make that small.
Yep.
Well, you do that, those negatives, you would do that on silver, like a negative plate.
Yep.
Well, the atoms of the silver can only be so small.
Yep.
When you get these little lines down to itty bitty living space, close enough together, all of a sudden you start getting quantum tunneling. Because the passing of this information electron get close enough that all of a sudden you got another phenomenon and these quantum freaking lightning bolts crap everywhere.
Well, it's kind of like that, but I mean, one thing that I just like to add.
We're going to find out when we come back. Yeah. So explain it to us.
Crimes of the Crown by Captain Mark. The Crown casts the world in shadow and claims to be our guiding light. Cowards clamor for security from boogeymen and ghost stories. While I say these hobgoblins are imaginary. I say those they propped up as our liberators are now subsisting on our bondage. I say there is freedom in the black, and that's exactly where we intend to go. The Crown banishes its own officers for exposing its crimes and tortures dissidents to the brink of madness. It dominates the globe and swallows the wealth of generations, leaving only blood and excrement. The Crown calls it piracy to explore frontiers beyond its grasp. So the time has come for us to define the conduct among pirates. I say the Crown has trampled our necks long enough. Need decentralized solutions to centralized problems? Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels? Or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com. We won't be hard to find.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agrist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agrist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agristhosting.com.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Sierra did that years ago.
Oh, that's great, dude.
I lost it. I found it.
That's great.
Okay. I don't know. We're quantum mechanics, dude. You know, this is...
Yeah, we got down another rabbit hole there.
Yeah, let's not go too far. But the point is that there is, once you start getting really small, to the point that you're the size of a transistor on a chip, is limited by, you know, the silver atoms that are exposed on the negative of the film that they made in the whatever. Then they do electron etching, or then they do, and they keep getting it smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller to where you're down to like, I mean, damn, how small you got to get?
Yeah.
Well, it's you can go pretty damn small, but at some point you have the barrier. You have it's like you have two lines where you have imagine two wires next to each other. You get them close enough and without insulation or whatever.
It's going to jump, yeah.
Yeah, they just jump between you. All of a sudden, you have like electrons winking in and out of existence all the time anyway.
Basically, yeah. I mean, the electrons kind of just decide, you know, hey, there's this barrier, there's this membrane, you know, but I'm just going
to
decide.
And it means nothing to me.
Yeah, but I'm just going to decide that I never existed on this side of the barrier. I just decide that I'm going to exist on that side of the barrier. And it's kind of how quantum mechanics is. It's kind of funky because it kind of defies our dimensional perspective. I mean, we have this like consistent linear, you know, Newtonian physics and relativity and like all these consistent rules that we know we can rely on and they're rigid. And then all of a sudden quantum mechanics comes in defying everything, right?
You know, what's interesting is Einstein knew this. He called it spooky action at a distance or some weird thing like that. He goes, look, there's this quantum thing. I don't know what the hell it is. You guys figure that out.
Yeah, he started quantum mechanics. That's what's kind of interesting is quantum mechanics and general relativity are the two most complete scientific theories that we have, but yet they both grossly contradict each other because relativity states that E equals mc squared. So for something to reach the speed of light is going to require an infinite amount of energy to accelerate towards that speed of light, right? Which means photons, right, shouldn't have any mass because if they had any mass, they shouldn't be able to go the speed of light. Yeah. But yet photons have this weird effect called the photovoltaic effect where photons will displace electrons and create voltage, aka solar power, right? Electrons have a mass. So if photons have a momentum associated with them, then that means they have some form of mass. But
They're going to the speed of light.
How do they do that? It can't be classical type of mass. So they call it like some weird photonic, you know, momentum mass type thing. You know, just so that they can start calculating.
Yeah, they made crap up.
But yeah, they don't. They have no idea.
I mean, this is how solar sails work. Yeah. You know, they actually
photonic momentum.
They have an actual impact. I mean, that's how we're going to go to the stars with our solar sail that we don't really know how it works. You know, that's one thing. When I was doing my battery project and everything, I'm going to.
Yeah, the carbon nanotubes.
For our bus, I'm going to tell you, this is what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
It's called Iron Edison.
Okay.
One of the audience, you know, sends this to me, and it was one of the guys, when I first started, they were first starting the distribution of the nickel iron batteries from China. There were two groups that were doing that. We just had a big, it was yesterday, we had me and Derek and Bob and Thomas, we had this long meeting with them because we got the love bus, I'll tell you all about that. So what happened was, this guy actually started selling carbon nanotube nickel iron batteries. Okay.
Yeah.
So I go, guess what we want? Okay. So sure enough, they do a carbon foam and they're doing exactly what my experiment.
Exactly what you're doing.
Same thing.
Well, you're onto it, man.
No, I knew. And because I tested it, I had it, I go, there it works. And they go, well, why don't you build it? I don't want to build them. I want to buy them. You know?
Yeah.
Well, when they came out,
So anyway,
I'll tell you about that later. So anyway, the what the hell were we talking about? Where were we leave off before I go down the road?
Quantum mechanics, photonic momentum, solar sails. That's where I last remember.
Yeah, whatever. What we wanted to really get into is Nexus and how it built up to that, and his understanding of, you know, the basic fundamentals of all of this stuff and how the computers themselves limit what can be done. And that's one thing. Everybody's going, it's all software. Well, yeah, I mean, you got to make it go whir, but you got to have something go whir. It's like gasoline in the car. You got to build the car first, you know? So I'm going, okay, or electric car or whatever. So you have the limitations Nexus. When you come into this and you're looking at the ones and zeros that are going into the chip and the hardware, you're going, I can make Nexus more efficient at the very beginning. We never really went to this, you know, talk about it. What did you decide you had to do?
A lot of things. I mean, it started, I wrote the time adjustment protocol, because so your computer keeps time through a little quartz crystal in the battery on your motherboard, right? Because there's this thing called the piezoelectric effect, which means if I apply a voltage to a quartz crystal, then it's going to vibrate at a specific frequency. Or if I apply a vibration to a quartz crystal, then it's going to generate an electrical impulse. And that's where
pressure or something.
Yeah, that's how you have contact mics. If you ever had those mics that you can, like, plug, you know, tape onto a table or something and it picks up the sound of the entire table, that's a contact microphone, because vibrations in contact with quartz causes the quartz to generate electrical impulses at the exact vibrations of the sound, right? So the opposite is true, and that's how you actually have frequency counters and things like that.
That's why with quartz you can make like light, you can make sparks with pressure on it or different quartz crystals.
Piezoelectric. Yep, exactly.
Yeah. So this is the quartz, this is stuff, and this is how you tune quartz to radio frequencies. Quartz is a cool thing.
Oh, it's amazing, yeah. You know? And so your computer's keeping this time, right? But you're going to have micro voltage oscillations in your computer that aren't going to be perfect, so that this 1 second of span can be interpreted differently by different computers. Maybe off by like such a small sliver, but you compound that by 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, the margin of error just keeps getting more and more. So that a lot of computers nowadays can have, you know, 5, 10, 20, 30, 50, even I've even seen some 5 or 10 minutes off from one another, depending on how bad your computer is, right? So how do you have this timekeeping system that's supposed to be using timestamps as a form of security to, you know if your clocks aren't all synchronized, right? So that's kind of one of the really first areas, I guess, I started, and then the multiple mining channels and stuff like that.
What did you do to balance that out? I mean, what?
I created a decentralized timekeeping protocol, so all the computers.
You created a decentralized timekeeping protocol.
It sounds a lot more sophisticated than it really is.
Don't sound sophisticated. Make it simple for Ernie.
So, there's a specific time that you call Unix time. Okay, I'm sure you've heard of Unix timestamps before.
I've heard of Unix, but I didn't know they had special time.
What it means is it's the number of seconds since January 1st, 1970. That's all it is, right? So we're at like 3 billion seconds right now or something like that. So, you know, every second, this timestamp's going to be increased by a value of one. And that's basically how we know time for, you know, any Linux, you know, type computer. And that's actually how we keep the time in the blockchain, right? As we use Unix timestamps. So this timestamp, therefore, represents, like I said, the number of seconds since January 1st, 1970. So the way the timekeeping protocol works is my computer will, when it first comes online, it'll go start talking to other nodes, right? But what it'll do is it'll ask the nodes, hey, here's my time, right? Here's my timestamp right now at this very minute. I'm going to send you my timestamp. And what you're going to do is you're going to say, okay, well, now I have your timestamp. Here's my timestamp, you know, my time's 5 seconds off or whatever. And you're going to send them back, yo, you're 5 seconds off, or you're 10 seconds off, or you're 1 second off, or, you know, you need to go back 10 seconds, you know, you're minus 10 seconds, right? So your node is essentially, you're doing this type of comparison.
Yeah, but there's a distance and speed of light, and how do they track all that?
Yeah, so I track the latency, so I actually reduce the latency round-trip time out of the actual calculations of the time offset, right?
Oh, okay.
So essentially what you can do then is now I can know your computer's time, right, versus my computer's time. And then other computers, you know, are all sharing the same type of time. So what they do is, you know, no matter if my clock's 20 seconds or 50 seconds or whatever off, if I'm 50 seconds off, my computer is going to get an offset of 50, right? And then I'm going to add that to my current Unix timestamp, right?
Are you changing the actual time in the computer, or you're just calculating it for the transaction?
I'm just calculating it for, yeah, the network.
Okay, so you're averaging it on the network of how many computers, gabillion? I mean, whatever's on the network, or how are you selecting individual computers?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's basically based off of DNS right now, and then eventually it's going to be based off of trust keys. So that's where we can get kind of into the elevated trust layer of the internet. But so basically I talk to your computer, I tell your computer my time, your computer responds back with saying your time's this many seconds off from my time.
But it wouldn't do just two computers. It's like doing
right now I think
thousands?
We have 30, 40, 50 that are doing timekeeping for us right now.
Okay, so it's only 30, 40, 50.
It's not a whole lot right now, but it's growing out further and further, yeah.
So this is something that hadn't been addressed before?
No. I mean, it was written in the Bitcoin comments, actually. On the version message for Bitcoin, you actually send your timestamp to the node. Is a part of that version to just be like, you know, your announcement, here's my time. And then you use to what you do is you calculate a median offset, which is like, okay, well, I'm going to kind of find the mean between all these different nodes that I'm connected to. And you kind of have this like somewhat pseudo synchronized time.
See, it's going to get geeky. Stay tuned.
But
one of the biggest stories we've seen in
stepped down following revelations of her involvement in a coupon forging scandal. After a week of fervent denials, Mayor Hallinan admitted that last Thursday she used 5 counterfeit coupons on her weekly shopping trip to the Kroger for a savings totaling $14.81.
Once you've made a fake coupon and you've had a taste of that power, it's hard to stop.
Mayor Hallinan also apologized for her first response to the controversy when she blamed Jared the Paperboy for stealing her coupons and replacing them with the fakes.
I don't know what to say. She could have ruined my career. I hope she goes to jail forever.
And in what many are saying is the ultimate indignity, Mayor Hallinan's photo has been put up on the Kroger's so-called banishment wall in between such undesirables as the Fredericks boy and infamous gum thief, Mr. Ivins.
This is the Onion News Network.
Now that you've found the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM, you may want to help expose others to our great programs. To assist you in doing so, you'll find resources at promote.lrn.fm, including details on how to get a free bumper sticker, quarter-page flyers you can print out and distribute, banners for your website, as well as files that will allow you to make your own custom banners and graphics. Visit promote.lrn.fm and help bring new listeners to the Liberty Radio Network. That's promote.lrn.fm.
What do you shop for that you could otherwise buy at Amazon? Pretty much everything, right? Amazon has competitive pricing and they deliver, and that's a big plus. If you could plan ahead in your shopping, would you be interested in saving up to 33%? There's a catch. You have to do your shopping in Bitcoin, but imagine those savings. It's like a huge raise. All you have to do is go to saveitpurse.com. We've saved thousands, and you can too. Plan ahead and save. Saveitpurse.com.
Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock continues after the news, live on the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
And now, Live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, Independent Beer and Sandcock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedom's Without, Phoenix.com, Colin Cantrell, Nick Dessert. We're going to get, yeah, we're just yakking it. See, this is why we need podcasts. Because, man, you get it all techie freaking, man, what the hell? And then break.
Yeah, I know,
we're
right?
Screwed. You know, we were out there talking, and Colin was saying, tell him about microchip. Tell him.
Oh, I mean, it's not necessarily fact, you know, I mean, it's just something that I heard, you know, I mean, when it comes to the types of things.
Yeah, whatever.
But from what I heard, they're planning on doing microchipping the vaccine for the coronavirus.
They want to make scared of crap everybody. You need to buy your chip.
Yep. That's what I heard. And I mean, viruses are kind of a bit of a trap anyway. Vaccines are a bit of a trap anyway.
Okay, so, now this is the thing. What do I always say? Ernie, do you believe the conspiracy that they would, you know, like put this in the water, in the food, in the air, and kind of now it's in your body? And I go, I don't know, can they?
They will.
I mean, you know, I don't need, I just need to know if they can. You know, Colin comes up and they show it again and again, and we're done.
Yeah.
You know, man, this is going to be good. And that's why you need new guys like Colin that can understand this at the base level of what the hell. All right. So let's go ahead and finish on your timestamp thing.
Yeah.
Now, to get this to be for what? Security? So that you're not what? Double spending? Because keep in mind, this is, they're talking nano moments of whatever. They're moving the exchange houses and the brokers and everything as close as they can to the New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah.
Because if they can be 30 feet closer than the other guy, all of a sudden these properties are worth a gazillion dollars just so they can...
They get to the front of the order.
They get to the front of it. And they can front, you know, the flash trading of whatever.
Yep.
So then when you go to satellites, what happens? It's a latency thing. Mm-hmm. So that's why Elon wants to have these satellites close. Mm-hmm. You have... less latency. I mean, it's faster communication and a gig up and down, and it's the world is going to be different.
Yeah. I mean, but I'm not entirely convinced Elon's model is going to bring too much change. I mean, all it's going to really do is just bring more internet access and other type of ISP, but it's not going to really change the underlying.
Well, I need to know if he's going to be compliant or not.
Yeah.
Is that going to be, you know, private ones and zeros or
no,
just
I mean, it's,
to
it's,
the man?
No, it's just, I mean, Elon is kind of the man as far as I'm concerned. I mean, his satellites themselves are just going to be, you know, I mean, supposedly he says they're going to be free, but really, like, you're using his infrastructure. So at any point, you know, I mean, NSA wants to come in and be like, hey, you know, we want back doors and all of this. I mean, they've been doing that with cryptography with OpenSSL, even what is SECP256V1, which is the default curve for any, you know, OpenSSL library, actually deliberately has weak random seeds so that the NSA can hack it. I mean, they're notorious for doing this for a long time.
So here comes Colin.
Yeah.
And he goes, I see what you're doing. So what you've done, the first thing we were talking about, you're averaging out over 30 different computers now.
No, you're not averaging. You're just essentially getting a consensus on the actual correct offset of the correct unified time. So this unified time exists outside of your normal computer's time, and your computer just talks to another computer to say, okay, how far off am I from the unified time? And then you just add that value to your current timestamp. So what
who decided what was unified?
It started when the network started, basically. So it just started at zero when the network started.
Okay, but I mean, how are they determining which is the right time? I mean, it comes from what?
It comes from other nodes. So nodes hold this type of time seed.
Yeah, but right? They're not all the same. So then they what?
They
average
are.
It out? Or
no, they are all the same. with the Unified Time Protocol. Everybody has it makes everybody have the exact same time stamp.
How it does it, that's geek stuff. So no, it makes a unified time.
So to start off unified time, let's say there's two nodes. There's you and there's me, right? You're the very first node to come onto the network ever, right? So you have nobody to ask for a time sample, right? So you, the very first node, are the one that sets that unified time, right? That unified time is going to be your computer's specific time, okay? Now, I come out of the network and I say, oh, hey, Ernie, what's your time? You know, here's my time. And you say, oh, you're 5 seconds off from me. Okay, oh, cool. I can add 5 seconds. So now what I calculate...
Down to how much? 5 milliseconds? I mean,
I go down to... I don't go into millisecond granularity. I just do to the second. But every clock will stay synchronized to the second, right? So that means you say, hey, my clock's 5 seconds off. So now I'll be like, okay, I'm going to add 5 seconds to my time. And now when I check my unified time, I'm going to have the exact same timestamp as you to the second, right? Okay. Now, another person comes on the network and they say, okay, hey, I need a unified timestamp. They go, oh, hey, Ernie, what's your unified time? Oh, hey, Colin, what's your unified time? I'll say, oh, here's my timestamp. Let's say they're 3 seconds off and they're, you know, since I would be 5 seconds off for you, that means they're 8 seconds off from you and 3 seconds off from me, right? You send them 8, I send them 3, but those values are going to bring them to the exact same timestamp.
Okay, and this is important because of why?
This is important because the blockchain itself is using time to a level for security, such as the difficulty adjustments rely on the time. In our case, we actually rely on time a lot more than on Bitcoin, but with Bitcoin, you can actually create a block 2 hours in the future because the times are so mixed and matched, they're not necessarily correct and they're not unified like our time stamping system is. So if I create a Bitcoin block and I'm a miner, I can just make that block happen to be 2 hours in the future, and my block can actually have a timestamp that's smaller than the previous block, which means like the previous block could have come out and said, okay, that happened 30 seconds ago.
Those aren't valid because I'm before you.
They are valid by Bitcoin, but it just makes a really messy timestamp. Because if you read Satoshi's white paper, I think it was section 2, he talks about timestamping server, right? And that's one thing that he compared a blockchain to, is kind of a timestamping system, which that's one component of it. But if you have timestamps that aren't accurate with one another, like how, you know, reliable are your timestamping systems?
Did he address, or she or them or whatever?
No.
Did they address how they were going to synchronize this?
Yes, Satoshi did. And he wrote a little comment, and this is kind of what brings earlier, in the version message, he said, when NTP is implemented, remove this. And he was talking about removing the timestamp that you'd send, right? NTP stands for Network Time Protocol, and that's what started me down that rabbit hole. I was like, okay, Network Time Protocol. I look it up, and I'm like, okay, this is kind of cool, but it's still centralized, right? You know, it's a timekeeping server that you're always talking to, right? And I didn't want to do this, so I was like, okay, well, I'll just build my own.
So you don't want the power of one central. I can set the time. I can do what I want.
Yeah, and so I was like, I'll figure out how to make this a decentralized protocol. So that's just like one of the many examples of things that I put in there because Satoshi had, you know, said, hey, when this is done, like, do it. But it seems like the Blockstream Bitcoin devs and whatever kind of went off on their own, not necessarily consistent with what Satoshi's comments were. So, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that's bad, but, you know, they did neglect some of these missing elements. So to the point where you heard Verge got 51% attacked multiple times, right?
No.
Did you? It was a couple years ago, I think. They were just like, they got 51% attacked, and then they got attacked again, and they got attacked again, I think. Each time they're like patching it. But what ended up happening is they have like an algorithm switch, right? So they'll switch to a different mining algorithm, right? Which is just a different hash function. Remember the hash function. And it's usually just like, oh, I'm using a different hash function, which, you know, just does different magical stuff to give you that, you know, bunch of zeros. And then, you know, the one, remember, where you're trying to look in a smaller space because you want to have more zeros. And if the space, the number space is smaller with more zeros, then it exponentially
becomes... I'll explain that in a second.
Yeah, it becomes more difficult to find. So these algorithms in Verge, anyway, they're switching it by timestamp. Now, that would be good if you had a timekeeping protocol, but they don't, right? And so what ended up happening is, since you can build a block 2 hours in the future, and they're saying, okay, well, every minute switch the algorithm, what this attacker did was they just made a block that was the algorithm they wanted, and then they pushed the timestamp again, and they actually were able to do kind of a time warp attack on the network itself and just continually pushing out on their same algorithm, so it broke checking and balancing, and they were 51% attacking. Because of the lack of timekeeping, and that's a really good example.
Because they understood how to do this.
Yep.
Alright. All right, we go into the break after the, you know, I'll explain what he was talking about. You're killing me, man.
I thought I did good.
From the sixth letter of Captain Mark. A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the Crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the Crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the Crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The Crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the Crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation, a difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the Crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The Crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the Crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the Crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com.
Looking for...
Okay, I'm going to try and explain this. This is one thing that Colin really explained to me that made it, I could get it a lot more.
Yeah.
SHA-256 is used for two different things. Mm-hmm. They needed to explain this to me. You get all kind of messed up. When you discover a block, the block has several... You're going to test me. I'm going to see how remember. Okay, here we go. How much time we got? Like 2 minutes. All right, see if I can do it in a minute and a half. In that block, you have one, the version, you know, what the hell you're doing. Yep, make sure you're doing the right crypto. Then you have the number, the link that goes to the previous block, so you have a chain.
Yep.
When you solve that, then it creates one that goes to the next one, so you got that. Then in that block, you have the Merkle route, which is all the transactions.
Yep.
This is how you water stamp. I go, how the hell do you have on the blockchain a 4 gig documentary or something? How the hell you guys are doing that? What you're doing is you're taking all that information, and if you change one little period, it changes the output of the hash for that.
Yep.
Well, you have all these transactions. It's called the Merkle route. And all these transactions go in, it gets a number. So that's how you can have all this data in the one megabyte.
It's aggregated into a small...
Yeah, it's just one...
Well, the block header...
So you go in, you have that one Merkle root, that's a number. Then you have variables in there. And you call... One's called the nonce, like nonsense number or whatever the hell it is.
Yep, yep.
And it's it comes out to the power of blah, blah, blah. It's like 4.2 billion options, something like that. Well, it's something like that.
Yeah. And Bitcoin, 4.3 billion.
And Bitcoin. So you have all these variables. Then you have a time variable. It's just another variable, and it's 7,200 seconds or 7,200.
It can be 7,200 seconds in the future from the previous block.
Okay, it's just another variable. Quiet. So you have you can tell me after I get done.
Yep.
You have 4.4 billion guesses that you do. You're going these variables. Boom, 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 boom. Well, you went through that in a half a second, and we're done with that.
Then
you change that other variable to a one of the one to 7,200. Then you do two. Then you do three.
Then you do the timestamp.
And every time you add another transaction, it changes that number.
Yep.
You know, the Merkle root number. Then you got. So that means with all that, you got a billion different options. You're throwing darts at a dartboard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens is when you guess correctly or below a value, I thought you had to guess the right number. No. It's a value.
It's a range.
There is a range of infinite. It's not infinite. It's finite. Now, we're coming back. Damn it. Are we back? Yep, we're back. All right, I'm trying to explain this. God dang it. All right. This is how blockchain works. You're going to get a master's degree here. I'm going to go from the beginning to the end on this so you guys understand. When you do a transaction, that goes into a memory pool.
Yep.
This memory pool of all these transactions, all the miners will pull those transactions,
yep,
that number from the Merkle root, goes and gives a hash. Here's that number. That goes into the block. See, I'm wondering how they got all these 50 gazillion things in 1 megabyte block. How the hell do they do that? How are you like determining that this game program is not, a hash from it, or somebody didn't change it, or had a virus, or whatever?
They use like aggregated forms, so like
you already lost me. So don't listen to him. So let me finish, and then let's get grandma to understand it here before you get geeky on me. So this is exactly what they were talking about. Okay. So all those transactions are brought down to a single number, and that fits into this block. So you got that. A miner says, okay, I have this number. That represents a bunch of transactions that was, mm-hmm, whittled down to this one number, and it's called the Merkle tree or Merkle root or whatever, yep, that goes into that. So you have that number. You got the right version that you're doing,
and your version,
right, Bitcoin.
Your version is what you use to control consensus updates, right? So if you need to change the rules that everybody needs to know, like let's say you change the block
version.
You
fork, you this, you're like, stop! I'm going to hit the button on you, man.
Okay.
So you have you're mining Bitcoin, not Bitcoin Cash, and the right version of Bitcoin. So you go, all right, so now you know you're doing the right version. Then you got a number that represents all the transactions. Then you have variables. One's called the nonce, and one's another time thing, which means you just get 50 gazillion guesses at something. Once you guess all the combinations, you don't have any more to guess anymore.
Yep.
So you got to change something. So you add one more transaction, it changes that root, whatever.
Or you...
Now, so then you have what you're looking to do is to guess. There's a difficulty that's put in there, and then there's the 14 days on Bitcoin,
yep,
that you're looking before you change the difficulty, yep, of it. That difficulty number is, when they were doing laptops in the beginning, well, then it was like you have this finite number. It's how many atoms in the universe, but it's a finite number. It's just big, giant-ass number. And you go, all right, I'm going to guess what it is. If you have every number between in the middle, you're at 50%. Every number guessed below that is good. Everyone above that is not. Yep. You didn't win the block. So these little computers could do this. Well, and you had more and more competition. What it did is it wanted to have an average of 10 minutes per block.
Yep.
If you did it in 8 minutes, well, then in 2 weeks, it would make the difficulty go up. If it was 11 minutes, it'd make the difficulty go down.
Exactly.
So I thought you had to guess a single number or something. No. And it's integer, just 1, 2, 3, yep, up to a billion, trillion,
and
Googleplex of whatever. So then you have this guess. Well, if you want to keep it at 10 minutes, well, you have to make it more and more difficult. There's, yep, fewer numbers that are correct. And it's a variable. You don't know what it is. You're just guessing. It's just, proof of work, man. I got computers sitting there going, we're burning up electrons. So when it does it, you go, okay, I win. What happened? There's a itty bitty sliver down at the very from 1 to whatever trillion. It's a big ass bunch of numbers. But because of this big giant dartboard of the universe, and you're trying to hit at least the right solar system. You may not have to, yep, hit the planet, but, yep, you got to hit the right solar system, yep, or the right galaxy, or the right. It, yep, depends. That difficulty is where that number. Everything below that is, yep, a good number, and the first, yep, one to hit that wins that block.
Yes,
that's what's going on.
You got it, man.
So I'm going to, once I understood that SHA-256,
yep,
which is this big number, because
what SHA-256? What is it?
It's SHA-256, 2 to the 256.
No. What is SHA-256?
It's an algorithm that, rambles and jumbles up and,
hashing,
creates a hash.
Hashing function.
Yeah, okay.
Hashing function.
Yeah, Bitcoin is, this is a hashing, a function of cryptography.
Yes,
it's not crypto. It is a function of it. It's the hash. It's just a way to guess a number that needs to be below enough. So when they say it has to have enough zeros.
No, a hash isn't a way to guess a number that's below. A hash is a digital fingerprint.
Right? Well, it is the number that you got to guess below.
Yeah,
okay, do all this. I got time here, man. I can make you chill for a second. You can correct me later. Let grandma kind of understand in the universe we're dealing with here. Okay, so when you do this guess, you're going, all right. They say, how many did you get all the zeros in front? What the hell are you guys talking about zero? What they're talking about is, are you accurate enough to where you are below a set number?
Yeah.
They go, this is the number, and it's somewhere below that number. So you have to do all this guessing. Boom, you hit a hash or a number, whatever. You do a guess, and it produces a result that's below the target number you win.
There you
and
go.
It takes it. So you want to have it to where it averages about 10 minutes it takes
yep.
before somebody discovers it. If
yep.
they, over a two-week period, if it takes longer than that, they make it more numbers available to guess. If it takes less time, they make it more,
less
make
numbers,
it less.
Yeah.
So that's the variable that moves. But it only changes every 2 weeks.
Yep.
Okay? So then you got to do it. That's where you have how many petahashes are being done. How many?
Yep.
What it is how many guesses are there.
Per
now,
second.
You used to be able to do it with your laptop. Now, not, okay?
No.
It'll take you a billion years. So this is what the security function is and all that kind of stuff. So then you have, you win that block, that gets sent out. Everybody goes, damn it, he got it. Then they start guessing again for the next block.
Yep.
Now then but then other people can guess at the same time. Then it's the one that built off of that. It's a whole other thing. We only got to get into that.
Yep.
So then you have, because that's why you want to have six confirmations for like absolute certitude or whatever. But after a few confirmations, you're buying a car or house or whatever.
Yep.
If you want to like buy a country, you might want to wait six, you know?
Yep.
So this is the main thing about what you're doing. That is how you win a block. But 256 is also used for other functions like the Merkle root or whatever the hell you're doing. That. So that's
it's
what you need to understand. There's two different ways of using SHA-256.
Yep.
And once you understand that, it makes it a little bit easier to understand the rest of it. So what you did with Nexus is you go, there are blocks, there are bottlenecks in this whole process from the beginning
to the end.
To the end.
Yep.
And that's what Nexus did. And they went, this bottleneck, this function, this build, and we're better over here doing that. How far off am I?
You're good. That was really good. There's the components of your every TXID in a transaction, if you're used to seeing your TXID in your Bitcoin transaction.
TXID. See, you're killing me, man.
Transaction ID, right? TXID. when somebody sends you coins and they're like, oh, here's the TXID, right? You get people to send those, right? Or you look at
withdrawal. Yeah, but it says transaction on it.
Okay, transaction. this TXID is actually a hash of the transaction. Right, and then these hashes of these transactions.
You go on the blockchain, you can see it, and you can, hey, I sent it, it shows here. I don't know why it's not in my wallet, and get a new wallet.
Yep, and then the hashes, the transaction hashes, or TXIDs, are then hashed together into that Merkle root, and that's what creates that. So very good. I'm impressed. You've retained a lot.
I kind of get it.
You're probably schooling everybody around that, man. I mean, you have a really nice...
Are you tired of governments...
You have a really good way to explain it.
Yeah, no, but I
like how you're using the universe solar system analogy. Like, you got the whole universe, and you got to hit this one little solar system. That's good. That's smart.
Well, it gets more and more difficult. You have to hit the continent. It gets more and more difficult. You have to hit that blade of grass. It gets more and more difficult. You got to hit the freaking atom in the blade of grass.
So here's the thing, too, of like another good example is say, okay, well, you got this 256 bit hash, which is this ridiculously large number. It's about 96 zeros. So one with 96 zeros following it. That's about how big that number is.
Yeah, whatever. NSA just gets more computers.
So,
but that's one thing that you're going to 1054.
1024. Yeah.
24.
Now, getting a hash value of one in a 256 byte number space should be the hardest hash to find.
Can you do that?
I've never seen a hash of one. Theoretically.
The
security of a hashing algorithm, that's kind of what makes Hashcash work, which is pretty cool, is because, the security of the hashing algorithm is you're going to have less probability to have these smaller numbers. It's going to be theoretically improbable to find that. So, like, finding a number that's so small that all of them are zeros and then one, theoretically.
Has anybody ever done that?
No, I've never seen it. I've never seen a hash.
I mean, would somebody report that, or would they even know? They look in there and say, hey, look, we hit one. Woo-hoo,
I don't know,
man.
I mean, 2 to the power of 123. So these are 256, so that's 2 to the power of 256. 2 to the power of 123 is more energy than we know of the existence of the entire universe, right? So in order to count to 2 to the 123 with your computer, it would require more energy than is known to exist in the entire universe. That's why they say, like, okay, 128 is considered, like, secure enough. Because, I mean, these numbers are so big. Like, it's more energy than we can possibly.
And this is what pisses off everybody. And I do this, and I go, so what you're saying is there's a chance. Yeah, but it's a really struggle. But you're saying there's a chance.
There's a chance.
Come on, say it. Say it. Yeah, there's a chance. So this is why I was going, because quantum computing.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, crap. All right, let me do this real quick. If you want to see where a point is on a line, you got a line. Now, imagine you have a sphere.
Yep.
Now, it's not just that it's a point on the surface of that sphere. It could be a millimeter underneath the surface, or a nano, whatever the hell, you know, all the way to a sphere contains 50 billion unlimited, infinite almost points. I guess it's infinite points. That you can't give me a number I can't double or cut in half. I mean, you know, but SHA-256 and all these algorithms for encryption, they use integers. It's full numbers. One, two, three, like that. Yep. So there is a, you know, a finite
everything
number.
In a computer is in a number. Everything in a computer, even those characters that you're typing in when you see and you're like, oh, this isn't numbers. No, it's a number. It's called ASCII, if any of you have seen it. ASCII or UTF-8. I'm sure you've seen that. Oh, you're
a
keyboard.
See it all the time.
Yeah, well, what that basically is a mapping between the actual key itself and a number. So ASCII is basically just saying number one is A, number two is B, number three is C, number four is blah, right? And you're just assigning some sort of symbolic representation, which would be the symbol or the number of the letter, with an actual integer's value, so that the computer only has to see all of these integers. It sees all these numbers, and then it takes that number and says, okay, well, since number one means A and there's a one here, that means we're going to put an A. And since number two means B, we're going to put a B, right? And then that's how you're typing out. Every time you're typing out on your computer, every character you're typing is one byte, right? Which can be 0 to 255, right? Or 256 values.
You know, now, that's one thing that I think, you know, is important people understand is that, so you understand this big giant ass, oh my God, atoms in the universe number, 2 to the 256, 2 to the 255 is half that.
Yep.
So when you go to 1024, that's a whole bunch more.
It's a lot. Multiply by 2, by 2, by 2.
Yeah,
by
so
two,
this
by
is
two,
when
two,
you
two,
got quantum, two. And I'm going, well, all right, here, we'll come back. And we're back. Damn it. Sorry, Ian. He yells when I do that. what we're having here, I go to the archive. What we're having, go to the stream. Damn it, just go to freedomspheres.com. There's a stream there. Or on float. All right. So if you're doing a big ass number and you understand that it's 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 2, you do that 256 times, you got a big ass atoms in the universe number.
Yeah.
255 is half of that.
Yep.
Because you multiply that number times 2, you get big.
And if you go down, you divide by 2. Yep.
Right. So it's big ass number. And you're trying to guess in a block discovery what number that there is that you are below a certain number. It's a target number. And if you hash all you get, it comes out and it spits out and goes, ding, your answer is at. Didn't work. Do it again.
To find a hash with 1 0 bit, which means it's 255 non-zero bits, right? That's half the number space again. So you add another zero bit, that's half the number space again.
Yeah, so you guys are already lost, aren't you? So, you can't open your mouth without losing me.
So if we have a value, let's just start pretty simply. We got one bit. It's a 0 or 1, right? Yeah. It can be one of two values, right? 0 or 1, right? Yeah. Then we add one more bit, right? Now we're going to multiply that by 2 again. So now instead of two values, we have four values, right? 1, 0, 1, 0, right? Which would be 0, 1, then 1, 0, then 1, 1, right? Those are your four values.
So that's 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yep. So anytime, so now if we're saying that we need to search for a space, but with the leading 0 bit, right? So we've got two bits, right? 1, 1, 0, 1, 0. This leading one, if this has to be 0, then now we have reduced our number of solutions from 4 possible solutions to 2 possible solutions. You understand?
The more zeros, the smaller the number.
Well, yeah, because this is 0, so that means this bit being 0 means it's erased, right? Now we have to either find one that's a 0 or a 1, right? So anytime that you add a 0 bit that's required, you actually cut the total solutions by a factor of 2. So when you cut those solutions in half, what you're doing is you're reducing that number space. So like you said, you have this big universe. Every time you add one of these zero bits, you know, the universe's size cuts in half as far as your solution. And then you add another one, it cuts in half again, and it cuts in half again, and it cuts in half again. And it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah, after about 80 zeros, you're kind of finding the Milky Way galaxy. Whatever.
I'm not sure about that specifically.
My point is you have billions of galaxies.
Yeah.
And you got enough zeros and you're cutting it down. You're getting down maybe to a single galaxy. Then you got to go deal with what planetary system in there.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, that's a decent... I mean, with Bitcoin, we're kind of like, I'd say maybe within Milky Way galaxy, maybe a little bit smaller than that. I mean, but Bitcoin proof of work is extremely high. Like, it's the difficulty is ridiculous. I mean, in the, you know...
I'm not going to hold you to how many freaking galaxies. I just want people to kind of get the idea. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
This is... It's big-ass number. See, it's not like you're looking for which blade of grass on the planet. No. It's which atom in what blade of grass on the planet.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just these numbers are huge.
And the solution becomes smaller. So the higher the difficulty, the less space there is for your solution. So you're kind of like
you're
shooting the darts.
The planets in the
your
universe.
Dartboard just keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller as the difficulty goes up.
Now, the
up.
Dartboard's really big. It's the bullseye gets smaller.
Yeah, the bullseye gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So you have to have that more fine-tuned aim. Or trial and error, you have to have more guesses to have the probability of getting
that. That's the other thing.
That's all.
Because
of
the algorithm, there's nothing you can derive from the information in there that you know where it's going to land.
Yep.
Because it's so
random.
It's a randomization. That's what makes this thing work.
Yep.
It's random. So you have to change it. But you always, this is why you can mark a file for like a game that you download. Oh, they infected my computer with the virus. Well, if you have a trusted hash, all these people did, this is the hash on, you know, Colin's website of, you know, trust me.
You can make sure it wasn't tampered with.
Yeah, you know that, you check that hash against, you know, that is the, you know, the original whatever I want, and it is the document, or it is the movie, or it is the, you know, marriage license, or it's the whatever the hell, okay?
Yep, absolutely.
You know, so this is why you can put marriages on the blockchain, land on the blockchain, and so on, but if you start off with crap in the beginning, you got crap at the end.
Yeah, it's like software is a lot like it's like a house or any type
of building. Like a notary public.
Right? I mean, if your building itself is built on a bad foundation, let's look at Venice for an example. It's perfect, right? I mean, Venice was actually built on a swamp. If you've ever done the research on it, I got interested in it the other day, so I just started reading all about it. What they did is they actually took these trees, these big trees, and they hammered these things into the swamp, into the mud, till they hit this nice clay bed, right? And they built everything on top of these big, you know, posts of trees.
They really wanted to get away from the man.
Yeah, I mean, if you look in Venice, like Venice, Italy, and I mean, you look under, all of these things are, you know, just built on these, you know, just giant logs that have never rotted because they're just sitting in the mud too. So it's kind of cool. But Venice is slowly sinking, right? The foundation of it is like not very good. So they're always having this problem. You can't just go in to Venice and be like, oh, hey, you know, we're going to just dig up all these things and like stop the city from sinking. It just doesn't work. You can't just deroot the foundation of a building. So the same sense with software, right? You have the foundation of your software and you just can't go redo that foundation, you know, unless, you know, you rebuild the entire thing. So look, Ethereum, perfect example of Ethereum 2.0 chain reboot. Ethereum is a lost cause. When I looked at their documentation too, I'm just like, oh my God, this reminds me of some of the programs I wrote when I was like 12, where it's just like, oh, hey, you know, this thing's cool. I'm going to throw this in here too. Oh, we want to add this in. Oh, we're going to make it so you can do structs now. Oh, we're going to add mappings and we're going to add all this stuff and we're going to make it so we can do tokens.
So 2.0 is built on the logs that they got in the swamp?
They
got new logs?
I mean, dude, the last success story I heard of Ethereum 2.0 is they spent 2 weeks or something in this cabin with like 100 developers or something just getting their nodes to talk to each other. Okay, like the first thing that your software should do is nodes talk to each other. Like
this is one thing that you were working on. I remember summer before last, you were very excited.
Yeah, yeah.
You called me, you're in Canada, and you met with the Internet 2.0 security of Canadian, U.S., North American intelligence government people of the protocol of whatever.
That was super fun because that was... I've been going to the IETF, which is where like all the internet standards are created. This particular instance, I decided to put myself out there and do a presentation in front of these, you know, some of these guys are 56-year-old engineers that have been designing and building the internet their entire lives, right? So, and there's not really many young people. I was definitely the youngest guy in the entire IETF. And at that point, I did a presentation to these guys about how a blockchain and distributed ledger can act as an abstraction on top of the internet to solve a lot of the issues of the internet that require trusted third parties, central authorities, things such as that. And then how we could actually, you know, help this one particular protocol, locator identity separation protocol, or LISP. But I actually walked away from that pretty unscathed, which is pretty amazing. I mean, this is like the wolf den.
Nobody understood what you just said. Okay. What it was doing, Nexus is its own, does all its kind of stuff, but it can interface with the old internet and their protocol so you can have all these new security features and ability to do the all this kind of stuff. These guys had no clue. They didn't know. You go to them, you say, look, I'm here to help you out. I'm going to do you a solid. We can use your same infrastructure here. We're just going to make it better with this because it interfaces with what you're doing. The Cisco guys, there they went. You my new best friend.
They liked it.
They, damn Skippy, they did. They come to Phoenician here. You had the Nexus Earth conference that you did a couple years ago, October. Bobby and I went there. We were hanging, you know, and hanging out. And these guys are going, woo, we love us some Nexus. Why? Because you solved all their problems or a lot of what they were trying to,
do. It's that. And, I mean, what got Dino's interest was actually the 2017 conference. He was the speaker there, and that's where me and him first started talking. And he just – he said he was fascinated with the 3DC architecture, and he's talked to blockchains all over, tons of different ones. And he's like, it's kind of funny because most blockchain people think that the actual network is like their network, and that's not even remotely true. None of them even really know anything below their transport, like the TCP. I know TCP, but they don't really know anything more than that. And
what
so
Colin
he was,
did is he understood he where the ones and zeros came from, where they went, and how. And if you don't know that, you can't build on top. You're just doing more mud cities.
Yeah, you got to build a proper foundation by understanding the problem and, you know, building the solution.
The new fourth edition of...
All right, go ahead. So this is the understanding that you had was the ones and zeros went through their networking protocol, blah, blah, blah. They built the internet and a bunch of government contracts of NSA, whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
And you go, yeah, whatever, I don't care. Because we have ones and zeros, and we can put Nexus on here. And it use your information transfer protocol that we can take that and give security. We can do speed. We can do, and this is how. And they saw that, and they go, because I learned enough from you from the last time when I saw heard their presentation. I'm probably one of four people who knew what the hell they're talking about, you know? So I go, okay, I get it. This is going, so Nexus, where are you guys now?
Tritium's done, so.
Which means what?
The foundation is in.
Okay.
That's what that means. That means I've spent close to 7 years building a foundation. But it's really nice now, too, because I have this really super clean house. I got everything really nicely organized. All the algorithms are clean. Like, the other devs get yelled at if they don't follow that, you know. So it's really, it's very, it's like having a completely just renovated, brand new, beautiful house. It still needs some of the bells and whistles and stuff, but like, it's
foundation.
I got the foundation. I got all these tools. Now I'm like, okay, I can do system registers here, and I can like I got all these things that are just going all over. Like, because now I have like a really amazing tool set to work from. Right, all these other projects that I've seen is like they're just kind of like, oh, you know, here's a. I always describe it as kind of like an upside down house. It's like a small foundation and then like this big building. You know, or like that slum in Hong Kong. I don't know if you've ever seen that. I got really interested in that, dude. I have to tell you about that. It's like this slum that lived in between Chinese and UK law. Because it was this like fort that China kept when they gave over Hong Kong. And then they ended up just like not really caring about it too much. So it's this little like 2-hectare area inside Hong Kong that was owned by Chinese while British ruled it. So it was like this embarrassment and became this slum where it's like pure anarchy, where nobody, no cops would go in this place. Became the densest populated area in the entire world. With
it's
like
amazing what happens when you just get freedom.
Oh my God. I mean, but their architecture was just absolute dog shit. And that's why I was getting, I mean, they didn't build it with any building platters. So, I mean, there's like cables and electricity and, like, you know, I mean, it was pretty bad. But, I mean, a lot of these people remember it fondly. But, I mean, that's the type of example of, like, what, you know, when you don't build something with any predetermination of, like, what it's going to unfold as and develop your foundation.
Yeah, what it's for.
You just end up with all these random buildings that just kind of pop up around each other and grow together into one thing, right? And that's not the ideal way you want to design software. And that's, when I read through Ethereum's documentation or stuff, it's kind of what it reminds me of. It's like, oh, let's build this building right here. Mm. Oh, well, we want to do tokens, but it doesn't do tokens. So, we need to add mapping systems in there, and then we can do a token. But we're gonna make every item in the map pre-initialized because it's just the only way we can do it right now. But it'll work. But, you know, I mean, it's not gonna be very fast, but it's gonna work. You know, and so, I mean, pardon me for being so, like, derogatory in it, but, you know,
but
I mean,
you knew that you had to create the foundation to build on.
I've seen Vitalik speak. I actually met him, and I was sitting with some of my anonymous hacker friends. You know, they're, like, total fucking trolls, man. So, I mean, we're just like, Vitalik goes up there and goes, so cryptography is a type of system that uses mathematics to identify people. And I'm like, are you sure you know what you're talking about?
Because, well, like, I mean, not to create a theory,
cryptography,
but I mean,
cryptography has nothing to do with identifying
them. That's discord.lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
You know, I'm feeling pretty optimistic, and you've helped me
too,
you know, a lot of ways, you know, to help me understand a lot of this, at least understand what's potentially possible. And I think you think big, you know.
Yeah,
a lot
yeah.
of people don't. They're yeah. just looking to carve out a little bit of, I kind of got some magic fairy dust and I,
yeah, yeah.
you know, do some stuff. But there, you get a foundational, fundamental understanding of a lot of this. It what it did for me is it goes, yeah, freedom. There's an app for that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's coming. And and that's why I'm really focusing on immutable data storage. That
yeah.
you know, that for me, they're yeah, well, you can do it. I go, no. I need a foundation.
Yep.
I need to know that it is never and forever and always and gonna be.
Yep.
And that's why, and it doesn't have to be IPFS, but that's been working pretty good for us so far.
Yeah, IPFS is good, but it has incentivization problems. So I think the IPFS
that has been the problem, but just, the ability yeah. to have immutable data was there. It's just how to have incentives for storing it and disseminating it
yep.
without it being gamed.
Yep.
And my thing was, I'm going, wait. So you're saying I can permanently store it, I'm just not going to get paid for doing it or something. They go, yeah. And I go, well, I don't give a crap.
Yeah,
I want
yeah.
to be able to permanently store it. Yeah,
yeah,
you guys go work on that. Let me know when
yeah,
you got
yeah,
it figured
yeah.
out, because I don't care. I'm not waiting. Because
yeah.
if I can have permanently stored data, that's worth it for me just to even do it. So we did.
Yeah. Yeah.
So y'all sitting there worrying about how you can get paid for it, I already did it. Done. Next.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next.
Yeah.
Buttheads. God. That was what was holding you up? Hell, it's worth it to me to be able to do it. Everybody's worried about how they're going to get all, you know, blockchain rich and everything. And the whole thing was, but you can't get paid for it. Yeah, but I don't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I could do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God. The people, I also want to slap them. It took years. You know who understood it was Derek.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
He told me 3 years ago. He goes, well, I think this is what you're talking about. And then I found out it was a product of Filecoin.
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Filecoin's actually, I think, maybe going to launch their network soon.
Yeah, whatever.
Like,
don't care.
They raised like $200 or $300 million to it.
Right away. Boom.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And then there's, I'm still waiting.
I mean, it's kind of funny though. All these ICOs, like, I mean, people say, "Oh yeah, if we had better funding," or whatever. I'm like, "Oh no, I mean, we're way better off than most." You know, I mean, it's easy for your market to come back. It's easy to raise money with an ICO. The money's the easy part. Building the tech that's never been built before and
build the tech, and the money comes.
That's the hard part. We've already done that. Like with
Trillion, no, everybody like, has been. Know? It's on the promise of building it.
Yeah.
You know, even you guys, you got a whole bunch of money. I'm going, yeah. Start building it, and I'll show you what's up.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like Tesla with their stock. All of a sudden, they're waiting. All of a sudden, they start actually producing. And oh my God, they'll have, you know, autopilot and semis on the road, and all of a sudden, it's worth $1 billion to $1 trillion now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going, look, you just build it, and they'll come.
Yeah. And so,
what do I always ask you? I'm going, how many hours are you sitting at your keyboard, Colin? How long? I'm bugging the crap out of you. How long are you in front of the keyboard? You in front of the keyboard?
12 hours. 8 to 12, sometimes 18 hours.
Good, because there were times you weren't.
I've been, I was fucking 2018, man, was like, oh my God, man. I mean, okay, so we're building a DAO, right? We're like, we're going to build a DAO that can't be infiltrated.
Distributed, autonomous organization.
Decentralized,
whatever.
Yeah, because distributed, well, this is really important. It's not just a whatever. A lot of people misunderstand this too. Decentralization is a governance term. Distribution is a spatial term, okay? So distribution, something can be distributed and centralized. Like Amazon's cloud is distributed, but centralized, right? It's still centrally controlled, but it's distributed. Decentralized implies the governance mechanism of it. So you want it to be decentralized and distributed because you want spatial distribution because that gives you redundancy, but you want the governance of it to be decentralized. And that's why people, all these guys, the big enterprises are saying distributed ledger technology, because they can make a distributed ledger
from a
centralized
thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, now this is why you allowed Davi and I to sit in on your confab that you had after Nexus Earth that you did at the Phoenician, and that was, you know, streaming ads, and I'm going, I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about. I tell you what I'm talking about. I want this, my pirate communication, all this pirate stuff. Yep. And I go, this is what we want. I don't know what the hell you guys are doing, but it better be that, you know?
Yeah.
But then everybody going, yeah, what he said. But what you were doing in that meeting is you were trying to set up the structure for the decentralized network.
Precisely. And I mean, decentralized networks, like even social organizational technologies, always usually follow a lattice type model, which is like everything's flat, it's all across, and there's different groups, right? But I mean, there's just a massive social scalability issue with that. It's just lattices can't communicate. I mean, you need some sort of aggregation, right? And that's where, like, I introduced the concept of social organizational model, which is meant to be an emergent system, which is something you can't just institute on people. It's supposed to emerge naturally on its own, which now it's happening, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, no, this is it's for the audience to understand what was going on. It was one of those kind of an ad hoc, me, we're talking about philosophy.
Yeah.
You were not so much on the technical and how it was a philosophy of how you had the decision-making decentralized for people to have the same goal to do it. You focused so much. It was not technical. It was social. It was a philosophical discussion you were having.
And it's also an architecture for humans, too, because like what we can do is when we can take these social organizational concepts and organize ourselves under them, you know, like, you know, this particular type of stack can handle, I mean, I think 10,000 to 20,000 people with no central leadership, right? And still scale. So it's kind of, it's taking those principles and concepts and applying them into an architecture that we can impose upon ourselves if we want to organize ourselves, because it makes things much more efficient when we're more organized, but still allow it to operate without the need for centralized leadership. So yeah, and that's really cool, because that's actually starting to emerge now. Like the concepts are getting out to the community, and communities are just starting working groups now, which is awesome. They're just like going out and firing their own up.
Yeah,
which is
this
awesome.
It's like when people go, we're doing the love bus thing. I told Colin about it, and they go, you know, well, how do you know you're going to have support? I go, because of the structure.
Yeah.
Because we're just there to help.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to bring the tools and kind of just whip ass, and what do you want to do?
Yeah.
And you provide the structure. It's spontaneous order. I've been doing this for 30 years. This is how it works. And I recognized what you were doing because I could see that was your focus. It wasn't technical.
No.
When you were having that meal, all these guys, they're like, oh, we're going to go. And that wasn't even it. It was how we're going to get the technical in there. Yeah. How are we going to interface? How are we going to socially connect ourselves? How are we going to have consensus? How are we going to, you know, I'm going, okay. And it's going to take time, but once you get that and you finish your tritium or whatever, all of a sudden, boom, here we go.
Yep.
Is it going? Are you going? Rock
And roll, so we're building the DAO right now, actually, which is, we're doing this as kind of a, you know, the cryptographically verified DAO where you can submit contracts and get funding.
So decentralized, autonomous organization.
Right. Yeah, so I started out with my DAO designing in like 2016 is when I really started thinking about the DAO and the 3DC. And then, lo and behold, corruption just kind of fell on my lap. And what I mean by that is, how do you design a system if you don't know exactly the moves of those you're designing it to protect against, right? Like, if you've never faced corruption, how can you design a corruptionless system, or how can you design a system that protects against corruption, right? So the last couple of years, I've been dealing with that.
And you go, damn, they can do that? They did that? God, they'll do it? If they can. I bet Ernie's sitting on your shoulder going, if they can, are.
You should just, I got so many stories, too many for this. But I mean, like, safe to say, like, I've seen a lot of the moves, especially from, you know, individuals that, you know, are pretty high up in, like, corporate America and stuff like that. And I mean, it gave me a really strong window into, like, you know, how damaging corruption can be. Also, how corruption takes hold, how it spreads. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of like a virus. Like, it's like a, it's a sickness in the head, you know, that just, like, continues to, like, spread from person to person.
I figured it out, man. I think I did.
Yeah?
It's sociopathy. These guys are sociopaths. They don't have empathy, and they rise to these positions, and they don't care and if you know, and because their goals are different.
Generally, yes, but you know, the other side of it too is the incentives of the social organizational model of the world that we have
created
right now,
by sociopaths to get support for what they want to do.
And it creates sociopaths too. You know, I mean, if you're not a sociopath, you're not as successful because you can't just fuck over people as easily, right?
Man, you want to get paid, you got to be able to F over people.
Oh, yeah.
Damn
it. Yeah,
you get bonuses for that.
Yeah, and it's just, it's absolutely, it's. It's ridiculous, and that needs to change. If the blockchain's ever going to do anything for the world, we need to know that we can design something that's going to change the incentives of the world, because right now the incentives of the world are not aligned with preserving the environment. They're not aligned with being a good human. People say it's all human nature and blah, blah, blah. No. Human nature is being exploited. Humans are naturally trusting and loving.
That's what's being exploited.
That is being exploited. Our nature is being exploited. Now, the exploitation is not our nature, right? The exploitation is just part of the hack, right? But when you can create a system that's consistent with our nature.
Show. Colin and I are going to be doing another Common Sense Show.
The world is a maddening cesspool of corruption and.
God dang it. See, we run out of time. That's right.
Every time.
Podcast. Guy, we can't do this commercial thing. Damn
Dude,
it.
We can't. Like,
you know,
we
whatever.
Like, 2 hours is like fucking.
I know.
It's just like a summer breeze.
I got to change it. I'm going to talk to Ian. Maybe we can do something. We go on this trip. I got to do it a different way because it's going to be. A lot of stuff. But this, you know, we're going to do another show with Dave Hodge. This is the Common Sense Show. He wanted to have us come on and do that. I'd set this up before, and Colin would be a good ad for that. So we're going to go ahead and do that, and then you can share with the conspiratorial crowd. This is like Alex Jones and people, Mac Adams kind of thing. This is going to be good.
Nice.
We gotta give them some optimism because they're coming.
Yeah, there's too many fear mongers, man. I mean, the fear is the trap, dude.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course it was going to get this bad.
Yeah.
It was always going to get this bad.
Yeah.
We knew we were preparing for it getting this bad.
Yep.
I'm like, okay, and here it comes. I never say, this is the year or the most important election or any of that crap.
No.
It's 2020, though.
Yeah.
That's why I'm going on the road. I mean, it's going to be, that's the tipping point. It's going to go one way or the other. And I know good always wins because good's better.
Yeah.
Because people prefer to be good.
The darkness always serves the light, man. I mean, they're both core essences of the same thing, which are important expressions, but the darkness always serves the light. I mean, anybody, like even a demon that's always trying to pick at you, all they're doing is teaching you to be a stronger individual, right? So, I mean, it's just, there's no way for it. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, Morphe's big into that, man.
Yeah,
he's it's all about, and that's why I no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear. No fear.
Yeah.
I do that
once
because,
you're afraid, they've already won, man.
Right.
Yeah.
Because then you would never even take a bus out in the Lone Prairie with your wife, out in the middle of with a target on the top for a Hellfire missile from the man. I mean, you know, yeah. I was like, yeah, whatever. I don't care. You know, I just, Donna's probably, she's like, yeah, whatever. Oh, Donna, get on the microphone over there. Get on Colin's mic. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Donna's, I don't know if she's getting better or not. She started getting sick yesterday. How you feeling?
Like crap.
Oh, Corona. Anyway, so, well, this is going to make you immune. All right. You know we're going on the road. We're going to be vulnerable. We're going to be out in the middle. Now, of course, we're putting security cameras, wide, you know, Wi-Fi, total 24/7. We go to sleep, everybody can watch. You know, protect it. But,
not.
You know, well, I'm not inside. I just see that, you know, it's just the bus will be kind of rocking a little bit, you know. But, God, what is the bus? Is it windy? So, you're concerned. You know what we're up against. You know these guys. I mean, you know, how are you dealing with that in your mind?
I haven't even thought about it. I mean, I have, but not just a faith thing, I guess. I mean, doesn't matter whether we're here or we're somewhere else. They're still going to come after us or not. I don't know.
See, we don't care. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's just we've been doing this for 30 years. Yeah. And it's been the big bad boys of kind of going, damn. And the only thing that's protected me, I think, other than being on top of the list, if you're going to be on the list, be on top of the list, it's safer there, is that I never went after individuals.
Yeah, when you do that.
You go after individuals, they don't like that. It's concepts, because they're not afraid of a philosophy.
Yeah.
They're afraid of shiny badges. That's why they're after Trump so much. They're missing the point. It's not Trump.
Yeah.
He's just a side effect, you know? It's an attitude.
Well, I mean, Donna's attitude's perfect. You're just like, so Donna, what do you think about it? She's like, I don't.
I know, that was from the Fountainhead.
Yeah, she's just like, I don't think about it.
You remember the Fountainhead? Did you ever watch that or read the book? Or
ah, no, that's an
the Fountainhead.
Rand,
it was yeah, it was Ayn Rand thing back in the 40s, 50s or something, and Gary Cooper, I think it was. But there was one scene that, you know, they've trashed everything and tore down and whatever and caused him all kinds of problems, and the guy, the architect, didn't care because he wouldn't do what he wanted to do. I don't care. I'll go, you know, bust marble. I don't give a crap. I mean, you know, and the reporter that did this to him, he goes to him and he says, I did this to you. I'm the one. I caused all. Yeah. What, you know, what do you think of me now? He goes, but I don't think of you. Oh, shit. You know, you're inconsequential. You're a side effect. I mean,
exactly.
You know, it's just, so by having, I never forgot that scene. I'm going, God, what a perfect answer. But I don't think of you.
Yeah, which well, is I mean, it's all the quantum observation, right? I mean, like, part of, an analogy that I've always heard that really kind of helps understand the whole quantum thing and like this miraculous, you know, expression of life is the photon travels and light is harvested by the plant at near perfect photosynthesis, near perfect photo efficiency, right? We're only like 10-15% now. Because at a certain point, like, this photon should collide with other particles on its way to the photosynthesizing core, but it doesn't. The probability of this photon actually reaching the core is the probability of you running through a forest blindfolded and not striking a single tree. But what the plant does is it puts the photon into a state of superposition and multiplies its route by every possibility, and it patiently refuses to...
Give me a second, dude.
And it patiently refuses to observe any of the casualties or observe itself striking another particle. And when it finally reaches the photosynthesizing core, the singularity itself collapses. Or not the singularity, the superposition collapses. And that then it travels back in time, like I was talking about the double slit experiment. And that becomes the only probability that ever existed, right? And that same concept is how life overcomes all these gross improbabilities. So what we focus on, what we observe of the world is extremely important. So when we're observing the world of like, they're going to hurt me, they're going to hurt me, I'm scared, you know, like, that is going to come. It's going to come into you.
Law of attraction, and I keep calling it quantum reality. I tell you, I go, I create my own reality by, you know, making sure
what you observe.
Yeah, what I get hit, and it goes back in time and says it was always going to get hit.
And that's the same thing with what you observe in other people, too. Have you ever had people demonize you and make you out to feel the villain? Like, you feel like the villain for a minute because they're projecting and witnessing and testifying against your ability to choose the light.
Which is why I don't do Facebook.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, because I don't need the, you know, because it's always going to be the trolls, right? It just created a kind of, it's like it was done on purpose by they, them, those.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to that. I got you there, Dave.